This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour World Report recorded on Friday, November 27th, 2020. I'm Mark Boulanger. In the report this week, violence against women in the transport sector as they are told to man up. How corporations in the United States stop unions. The Labour Start report about union events and singing.
A woman's place is in her union. We organize and stand for equal rights.
This is Radio Labour. During the week of November 25th, unions around the world organized many events commemorating the UN's International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. One of the sectors severely affected by workplace violence against women is transportation, where women work as bus drivers, flight attendants, truck drivers, seafarers, and other occupations. I talked to Jody Evans about violence against women in the transportation sector. Ms. Evans is the Women Transport Workers and Gender Equality Officer for the International Transport Workers Federation. The ITF represents 20 million workers in nearly 700 unions. I asked her about violence against women in the transport sector.
Mark, gender-based violence is endemic in the stubbornly male-dominated transport industry. A woman transport worker from Kenya told me that her colleagues have started going to the toilet in groups after one woman was raped during a blackout. Sectors like transport have been constructed and continue to structure work with men in mind, so women often feel unwelcome. Women are increasingly part of the workforce and claiming their space, but they are reminded time and time again that it's a man's world and they don't belong. They are told to man up or leave the job, and they are made to believe that violence is inevitable. Women are also often forced to be limited in the roles that they play in the industry to those that society perceives as fit for women, like customer service and administration. Women often tell us how proud they are to be transport workers and including keeping the world moving during this pandemic. I've spoken to many women who are proud to be one of the first women employed in particular jobs traditionally seen as men's work. But women also tell us that working in this industry can be tough. A 2017 survey by the European Transport Workers Federation, the ETF, found that 26% of the 1,444 women transport workers they surveyed believe that harassment is considered to be part of the job. One aircraft marshaller from Brazil shared with me the words of her colleague when she complained about having to use the men's toilet. He said, "Love, for you to stay here, you're going to have to learn to pee standing up. This is a man's place." Many women are excluded from decent transport jobs because of violence, and others leave the industry because of the violence they've been subjected to.
What are some of the solutions the ITF has been working on to decrease violence against women in the workplace?
Well, since the problem is in the root or the foundation, the solutions or the change also have to be at that very root or foundation level. So we're working on solutions globally, but also with our affiliated trade unions for action locally. We're developing our global policy and strategy to challenge the gender-segregated nature of the transport industry, an industry still very wedded to the idea of boys and girls jobs, which leads to a set of expectations and behaviours for workers, and that limits women's opportunities and needs to be challenged. Making the issues visible is a really crucial step towards solving the problem, and gender impact assessment and industry policy and decision-making is vital. Very recently, we supported women leaders from our affiliated trade unions in India to undertake the largest known national study on domestic violence and the workplace with over 15,500 participants. This study was possible because of the development and the implementation of the ITF Women's Advocacy Program, where women workplace activists are trained to recognise, respond and refer to support colleagues who are survivors of violence and harassment, whether that originates in the home or the workplace. This is true global sisterhood in action.
You can find more information about violence against women in the transport sector at itfglobal.org.
Why do big corporations continue to win while workers get shafted? It all comes down to power. Who has it and who doesn't?
One of the promises the Biden campaign made during the recent U.S. elections is to re-energize unions in the country. That, predicts University of California professor Robert Reich, will not be easy. But much can be done, he says in a new video. And he should know. He was the Secretary of Labor during the first Clinton administration.
Big corporations have become so dominant that workers and consumers have fewer options and have to accept the wages and prices these giant corporations offer. This has become even worse now that thousands of small businesses have had to close as a result of the pandemic, while mammoth corporations are being bailed out. At the same time, worker bargaining power has declined as fewer workers are unionized and technologies have made outsourcing easy, allowing corporations to get the labor they need for cheap. These two changes in bargaining power didn't happen by accident. As corporations have gained power, they've been able to gut anti-monopoly laws, allowing them to grow even more dominant. At the same time, fewer workers have joined unions because corporations have undermined the nation's labor laws, and many state legislatures, under intense corporate lobbying, have enacted laws making it harder to form unions. Because of these deliberate power shifts, even before the pandemic, a steadily larger portion of corporate revenues have been siphoned off to profits and a shrinking portion allocated to wages. Once the economy tanked, the stock market retained much of its value, while millions of workers lost jobs and the unemployment rate soared to Great Depression-era levels. Meanwhile, as unions have shrunk, so too has their political power. In 2009, even with a Democratic president and Democrats in control of Congress, unions could not muster enough votes to enact a simple reform that would have made it easier for workplaces to unionize. All the while, corporations have been getting states to enact so-called right-to-work laws, barring unions from requiring dues from workers they represent. Since worker representation costs money, these laws effectively gut the unions by not requiring workers to pay dues. In 2018, the Supreme Court, in an opinion delivered by the court's five Republican appointees, extended right to work to public employees. This great shift in bargaining power from workers to corporate shareholders has created an increasingly angry working class, vulnerable to demagogues peddling authoritarianism, racism, and xenophobia. Trump took full advantage. All of this has pushed a larger portion of national income into profits and a lower portion into wages than at any time since World War II. That's true even during a severe downturn. For the last decade, most profits have been going into stock buybacks and higher executive pay rather than new investment. So what can be done to restore bargaining power to workers and narrow the widening gap between corporate profits and wages? For one, make stock buybacks illegal, as they were before the Securities and Exchange Commission legalized them under Ronald Reagan. This would prevent corporate juggernauts from siphoning profits into buybacks and instead direct profits toward economic investment. Another solution, enact a national ban on right-to-work laws, thereby restoring power to unions and the workers they represent. Require greater worker representation on corporate boards, as Germany has done through its employee co-determination system. This is all about power. The good news is that rebalancing the power of workers and corporations can create an economy and a democracy that works for all, not just a privileged few.
Mr. Wright's video was produced by Inequality Media. It and other videos are available on his YouTube channel. Here with his report about union events is Labor Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
Each day, Labor Start's volunteers collect hundreds of news items about workers and their unions from around the world in 36 languages. Here's a small sample of that work. Our top stories section included links to coverage of the campaign to force the release of a university worker facing the death penalty in Iran, the labor movement's reaction to the G20 summit, and a comparison of the evolving union scenes in China and in Vietnam. The emerging trends in our news coverage include the extent to which marginalized workers have been both hit especially hard by the pandemic, but also how they have been excluded from social benefits extended to other workers. Not surprisingly, these workers are most often women. Three occupational groups stand out in this regard. Garment workers were amongst the first to experience a shutdown and the loss of employment starting in March and continuing to today. The globalization of the garment industry has meant that most production long ago moved to the low-wage economies of countries like Nicaragua, Bangladesh, Ethiopia, and in Southeast Asia. The vast majority of these workers have no social benefits to replace their lost earnings. In most of the affected countries, trade unions have been focusing on a fast and safe return to work. Part of that strategy is organizing workers in the global north to place pressure on the global brands for whom the unemployed workers once made clothes in an attempt to force the brands to take some responsibility for the safety of workers throughout their supply chains. Domestic workers continue to experience everything from unemployment in their country of work, which can lead quickly to homelessness, through imprisonment prior to deportation, to something resembling modern-day slavery as they are confined to their employers' homes and denied their wages. Global Union Federation, the International Domestic Workers Federation, is continuing its efforts to repatriate workers, but the scope of the problem is huge and the almost informal nature of the work arrangements in most countries makes just finding many of these workers difficult. Workers from the Philippines, East Africa, Malaysia, and Central America appear to be most affected. The impact of the pandemic on these women is multiplied given that most are supporting families in their countries of origin. For our Working Women page, our volunteers found news of the ways in which unions around the world marked the International Day for the Prevention of Violence Against Women and Children, a global fast food workers' effort against sexual harassment in the workplace, and how working at home has increased online gendered harassment of women across much of Europe. Okay, Bogart. No. Thank you. Out you go. Okay, I'll rub your belly in a minute. This is Derek Blackadder from Labor Start, reporting for Radio Labor.
Now here is Union Nation with A Woman's Place is in Her Union.
A woman's place is in her union. We organize and stand for equal rights, hardships, and discrimination. Ongoing battles we continue to fight. Dedicated to the job done. A woman's place is in her union. Fearless and productive, embracing and strong. I'm a union woman, and this is where I belong. Union woman, that's what I am. Mother to our future, guaranteed to take a stand. A union woman, only you can depend. I'll lift you up when you need a helping hand. Walk with me, brothers and sisters in this nation. Let the world know all about our situations. We'll overcome all the evils in the workplace and make this world better for the union race. Dedicated to get the job done.
And that's it, international labor news you can use. You can find our features and daily newscasts at radiolabor.net. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.